This Week in Survivor is sponsored by Bet Online. Currently, no NBA, no NHL, no MLB. You might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, as they are bringing the Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, no problem. Bet Online has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can wager on. And if you're into entertainment betting, you could still bet on Survivor, American Idol, stock prices, even the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, and it's all open 24 hours a day and all online. Of course, for our NFL football fans following the upcoming draft, stay tuned through the end of the episode for Ross Tucker's expert draft analysis presented by BetOnline. That's going to be after the episode. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Podcast1 for your sign-up bonus. Visit betonline.ag and don't forget that promo code podcast1 for your sign up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Let's talk about tweets and take a quiz so we can find out who the smartest one is. What happened this week in Survivor?
Yeah, that's right. This week in Survivor, here for week number 9, I'm Rob Cesternino, and I am back with a man who has been so busy this weekend running one of his patented ORGs. Here he is, back to talk about Survivor with us, the great Jordan Kalish.
Yes, I feel like I've had one of the busiest weekends in my life, even though I did not leave my apartment. I ran a version with my friend Naomi Calhoun, who produced the game. We ran a online version of the game, The Circle. We changed up a lot of the things from the television show, but we had such a great time doing it. And a lot of people, if you're listening to this podcast, there's a lot of people who played that you'd be familiar with. So we'll start releasing some videos and some audio from that soon.
Good. I'm so excited for everybody today because Jordan has such a spring in his step. Unlike last week when he was down in the dumps, didn't even have categories for the This Week in Survivor History questions. Yeah. But now he said, you're back, baby, right?
Exactly. But also my patented org hosting. This is the first time I've ever hosted an org, so I don't know if I'm a patented org host yet. I have played in a couple of them, but before Sequester, it had been 6 years. So I'm not really an org guy. I'm more of a live game guy. But it was really fun getting my first hosting experience.
I don't know
experience.
If I'm an org guy.
I mean, you've done one.
I have to get all sorts of new org friends and, you know.
I mean, you knew everybody going into it, so you're not going to make new friends from playing Sequester.
Okay. All right. Of course, our guest today to talk about everything that we've talked to her many a times about the character types of Survivor. The inventor of the Kontz types is here. Angie Kontz, how are you?
I'm doing okay, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Happy to have you here with us to talk about the week in Survivor. How's everything going on your end, Angie?
I mean, given the circumstances, I can't complain. I'm safe. I'm healthy. I'm employed. And Toby and I are living together for like the first time in our almost five-year relationship. So that's, we're all blue skies over here.
Okay. We'll be hearing from Toby later on in the show to help out with the This Week in Survivor History quiz. But Survivor Winners at War is going on, our second week at the Merge, and we did have some big news announced today on Monday, where it has been announced that Survivor is going to have, that we've been all been eyeing the live finale, and what are they going to do with all of the complications from coronavirus, but it's been announced that Survivor is going to have a virtual reunion for the very first time, Angie. What's your reaction to the virtual reunion?
I'm happy to hear that they're doing that. I would rather see that than them trying to cram some people in the studio, some people in at home. Like, there was a reunion show on Australian Survivor that made me a little bit uncomfortable because it was still a fairly large gathering, and I would have preferred that that the regular host just host the whole thing and do a virtual thing. So I think we're getting very accustomed to that kind of Zoom mm-hmm. feeling. Like even SNL is doing it now. So I think that's the way to go.
Okay. Jordan, when they have everybody on the line for the virtual finale, should they host an ORG?
I think it's a missed opportunity if they don't host an ORG. You're getting all those people in a room online anyway. Might as well play a second Winners at War.
Okay. Angie, do you have any picks for who might have the worst setup at their house for the Survivor virtual reunion?
Isn't it always Denise? Isn't that the one that you struggle with the most?
Yeah, well, let me just tell you in some inside baseball who I think could be the problems with. So just in the past, like I know that Denise has, we've struggled with connecting on the podcast. Robin Amber, I think, could be a trouble spot. I think that could be problematic. I certainly have struggled with connecting with Sandra on different calls. Like, I could just tell you the list of people that I know. There are some people that I know that I'm going to call them, and then we're gonna connect, and we're going to have a great phone or a connection over the internet, and that's going to be wonderful. And then there's other people I'm going to be calling their cell phones. And so it's the cell phone people that I'd be the most worried about here at the virtual reunion.
I don't think Jeff is putting up with cell phone calls for 1 second. I think they're going to tech vet everybody.
Yeah.
And they're going to get some poor intern to sit for days with Sandra until she figures out how to install Zoom through her computer.
Yeah. Best case scenario, some people might just be on FaceTime. That's all I'm saying. That's best case scenario.
And then I don't know how they're going to then like cut to that person. What I do like about the virtual quality of like the Zoom meeting is that the moderator of Zoom can just hit the mute button when they just want that person to stop talking. Like you don't have to like awkwardly try and cut off their long-winded answer in the middle of the live reunion. You just mute them.
You know, Jordan, there's been a lot of talk in the news about security concerns, especially like with the NFL draft and these Zoom bombings that are going in with people showing up. Would they have to potentially worry about any sort of like security concerns or hacking from, say, like survivors that were not invited to be in this season, like a Russell Hance popping into the live call?
I think that is a problem. Russell Hance is someone who I think thinks of himself as a winner of Survivor.
Is this thing on?
We know that Missy Payne likes to just show up with her daughter Baylor. So I think those are some of the issues that you might have. But I'm sure they will make sure their security settings are on. They'll probably have a password involved. Luckily, as a teacher, I have not none of my classes have been Zoom bombed yet. However, my school district has at least temporarily banned Zoom because of the security issues, because there have been some problems like that. So it would be unfortunate if the Survivor finale was hijacked by either a non-winner at war or someone who just doesn't belong on the call.
This is my Zoom. Okay. Angie also announced was that they're going to have a 2-hour episode of Survivor coming up on May 6th. But this has been met with some criticism of, hey, why are they doing 2-hour episodes? Why aren't they giving us more weeks? The Survivor fans can't be happy. The Survivor fans said, hey, I want longer episodes. As Survivor said, no. And then we get a longer episode. They said, well, why aren't you giving us more weeks?
Survivor fans are never happy. They're just no matter what they want they want their shoes on and off at the same time, Rob. They're like toddlers.
Yeah. So we are going to have a lot of Survivor. It might be the last time we have a lot of Survivor for some time. 2 hours on May 6th, 3 hours on May 13th as we start to now look ahead over the horizon towards the end game of this season. But we're still here at the beginning of the merge. We saw the fall of Adam Klein this season. Angie, do you recall how did you have Adam doing in your character types this season?
Oh, don't even talk about the character types. It's like a world gone mad, and my character types have reflected just such a thing. He was supposed to do like middle well. I mean, accurate. Yeah, he's been fairly accurate, but just overall, I was not surprised, just as a Survivor fan, to see Adam go the way that he did this week.
Yeah. And so Adam ended up having a very historic
moment.
in the episode this week where he ended up going for the idol at Tribal Council. Angie, what was your reaction to seeing all that play out for Adam?
I mean, it was just the cherry on the top of the Adam shit sandwich in my mind. You know, I just saw like his gameplay going from bad to worse. He had a couple of upticks throughout the season, but ultimately I just can't help noticing a pattern with him that when things are going well, he sabotages himself, you know? And I kind of developed a little bit of a theory about it. I was going over it, thinking through like all of his moves from the beginning and in preparation for us talking about it today. And I kind of get the sense that he's like one of these players, and I want to equate it to JT in Heroes Villains. He's one of these winners who ended up winning and he credited a strategy that ultimately, I mean, he ended up winning using that, like despite that strategy, he ended up winning. And then he has this false sense of security about the successful aspects of that strategy and then tries to reemploy it. And then the whole thing blows up in his face. So I have a feeling that in his first season that there were so many moving parts and there were so many big game players and so much shenanigans and backstabbing going on that the level of mistrust that he ensued in his alliances and in his tribe mates didn't catch up to him. But in this season, because you've got seasoned, measured players that know what they're doing and know how to read the room and aren't as frenetic and paranoid as maybe the players in Millennials versus Gen X, it caught up to him immediately. And there were a couple of moments where the tides had turned and he was okay. And he stirred it up again and put the focus back on him. So I wanted to kind of review it all because he was like, oh, three strikes, you're out. I've got like seven strikes here against Adam. Yeah. He had like maybe three good moves against seven really bad ones. So by the time he's like, that fleur-de-lis is an idol. And like, I mean, it would be cool if it was. I'm glad he went and tried it because that, you know, like, why not? But man, that just the whole thing just made him look like a buffoon in the end, I thought, which is, I know sounds harsh, but I've never really put that much credit into Adam's gameplay. I think he kind of like, Toby was saying earlier, you like Christied it from the
Christy Bennett.
Yeah, Christy Bennett. Like he just kind of managed to not have anyone.
The winner of the first Australian Survivor.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's just like just, you know, don't look at me over here. And he just managed to like cut the knees off of every single person in his alliance that threatened him. And he was trying to follow that same book. It's almost like he had this playbook given to him, like how to win Survivor. And he's like a paint by numbers. He's like step one. And without fully understanding the organic nature of the relationships required and just having a false sense, I think, of how deep his relationships are with people that he has no relationship with at all. You know, like he has this group of people that are willing to be on his side. He makes them mistrust him. They're still willing to work with him. And then he targets that group instead of countless other people that he could have targeted, you know? So it's just misstep after misstep.
Yeah, I think it was a tough spot for him, especially as we got into this merge where he had lost the trust of a lot of people in the pre-merge game. But I feel like that you're in this situation where you have this group of eight, which I've been calling them a voting blob. And the voting blob, I think, for the most part, has been wanting to like play it safe. And they're not really looking for any sort of like big moves yet. Everybody's like holding their cards pretty close to the vest. And then Adam, I think, really ended up making himself by trying to really play hard and try to like unseat the voting blob. I think he really ended up making himself even a bigger target here at this early point in the merge.
Absolutely. I mean, Nick was at the bottom. Everyone wanted to get rid of Nick. And then when they, you know, when Adam had a chance to reinforce that, he said, we should go after Sarah, who's like one of maybe three or four people willing to work with Adam, which is just not smart. It's not smart because then he's completely alienated everyone who was willing to work with him. To what end? So what if they got out Sarah? Does he think that now he's going to be, you know, Ben's number one? Not a chance because he can't have a, you know, so many people he's struggling to have a good relationship with. Denise is really the only person And she can get along with anybody. That's her superpower. So don't think that that's some magical relationship, you know, juju that you got going on.
Yeah. And in the same way that Sophie last week, you know, that while she might have been threatened by Jeremy, that she felt like that the best way to attack Jeremy was to go with a target outside of the voting blob, that maybe, you know, a target that was more on the, you know, perimeter of the voting blob, somebody who wasn't as well insulated as Sarah, like maybe going after Ben might have been a move that might have been able to get some traction. Probably not, but that Sarah is just has, you know, she's connected with Ben, connected with Sophie, connected with Kim, connected with, did I say Tony already? She's got a million connections so far in the game right now. So right. Sarah is not somebody that a bunch of people, I think we're going to jump on board, at least jump on board with Adam to potentially take her out. Jordan, let me get your take on the downfall of Adam this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think Angie has a good point when she says that he's trying to play too similar to a game that he played in Millennials versus Gen X. And every season is different. Every group of people that you're working with is different. And when you're playing with all these former winners, Adam's strategy in Millennials versus Gen X, which I think was a really good strategy that worked for him, it was never like, I want to control every single vote. It was, let's put these targets ahead of me. And it worked to perfection, where he had, you know, Brett, who was a very big jury threat. Jay was ahead of him as a big jury threat. David was ahead of him as a big jury threat. And when we got to the end game, people wanted to get rid of these people as opposed to him. And then he went to the end with, you know, with Hannah and with Ken, which was obviously, you know, it was a 10-0 sweep. So I think that I do think that Adam did some good things in this game. And we even see Tyson talking about it, where, you know, Adam did seem to have some social clout in the group. Obviously not as much as he would have liked, because if he did, he wouldn't have been the one voted out here. But you did have Tyson talking about how persuasive he was. We did have certain players talking about the fact that he was actually playing a pretty good game. I just think, like Angie said before, when there was someone like Nick who was sticking out as the person that a lot of people wanted to go home, he had just been on the minority of the vote when Wendell went home, I think he should have just gone with the status quo. But that's never really been Adam's game. Adam, I think, I think what makes Adam a very good player is that he always like thinks, what can go wrong right now? And he tries to anticipate, you know, anything going wrong in his game, and how am I going to stop this from me being the vote? But I think sometimes he might get too much into his own head, where he is so reactive as a player that he might think, oh, this could go wrong, and I'm going to react as if it went wrong. So I think he was maybe just sticking out too much in the group in trying to flip the vote onto Sarah. I think Sarah is going to be a target in this game pretty soon. I just think it was a little bit too soon to target her, because she's so intertwined with the main alliance right now.
I don't know if I would necessarily agree that Adam always looks at a situation and identifies what are the things that can go wrong, because I feel like that there are some things, if he does think that way, I feel like, you know, telling Boston Rob the plan, like I think that there's a lot of things that he does that are potentially things that are going to, if he is thinking about what can go wrong, then I think maybe he's not thinking all of the situations through. But what I do think about Adam is that I do think that maybe he overestimates his ability to be able to fix any things that are going on, and that maybe he feels like that he can do more in terms of being a survivor player than he might actually be able to take on.
And I realized when I said that he's a reactive player, what I meant to say is that he's a proactive player, which in most cases is a very good thing. But I think he takes the proactiveness to another level, and he does it in a way where other players become paranoid about him, because they see his mind going 100 miles a minute. And then they think, am I going to be on the wrong end of one of Adam's plots? And I think that the Millennials versus Gen X cast didn't catch on to him soon enough. And I don't think they realized that he was a threat until it was too late. But in this game, I mean, you're playing against the greatest competition that Survivor's ever put out. And you know that because it's all people who have won. And I think Adam just, you know, they see him not only as a fellow winner, but also as a super fan who is constantly thinking strategy, talking strategy. And, you know, if you look at someone like, you know, like Ben, who's sort of been more of a goofy character this season, I do think that Ben is someone who might be targeted, at some point, but I don't think it's going to be because they see him as a strategic mastermind. I think it might be because he's just not as socially intertwined into the alliances. But I do think that Adam went a little bit overboard with, getting off the Nick thing and trying to target Sarah.
Okay, we spent so much time talking about Adam. Angie, here we are, that we're 9 weeks into Survivor Winners at War. You are one of the biggest Kim Spradlin superfan stands around. And here we are very quietly with Kim Spradlin at the center of a lot of what's going on, but I think very much under the radar of the audience at large, and potentially, because of the edit, is she also under the radar of the players that are out there, in your opinion?
I know we don't like to look at the edit too much, but being under the radar of the edit itself does not bode well for her, which makes me very sad. So I think that Kim is doing a very good job of integrating for the very first time into the players here, because I think she's had a real uphill battle the whole time, which, as she stated at the beginning, is not something she's used to. So she's had to completely upend her game style and figure out how to go from the bottom, as opposed to being in the majority right from the beginning. And I think that she's doing a very good job of still being, having her her finger on the pulse of everybody. She does have connections to almost every player in the merge right now. She's still able to win an immunity without people talking about her too much, which is excellent. Like, if it were not for the quietness of what's coming across the audience, I'd say that she was in an extremely good spot. And I wonder, does this mean that she's like going out fourth or something like that? That player that goes deep but doesn't, because they're not in the finals, they don't get the full narrative edit or something like that. I'm shocked at how she's managed to keep the target off of herself. She's unfortunately, I think a lot of that, how you get to the end when you're such a big threat or a lion, as Tony would say, is by not trying to strategize too much, by not trying to make big flashy moves. But then, who cares if you get to the end? You haven't done anything to get there. So it's a really tough situation she's in.
So how do you think that this voting blob is going to shake out, where you have basically like this group of eight that's voting together, and then you also have Nick and Michelle at the bottom?
I mean, I don't know how firmly Tyson and Kim are in that group. I don't know how firmly Tony is in that group. And I see them as being kind of the stragglers on the edge. And I think everybody else is in there very solidly. And I think that it's going to be a bit of a struggle for Tyson, Kim, Tony, Michelle, and Nick to stay in there. I'm also questioning Denise's place in that.
Yeah.
Because she didn't get picked
And Jeremy too, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Jeremy, yeah, I mean, I feel like Jeremy's still got a lot of ties to a bunch of different people. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely the Sophie, Ben, Sarah trio that I think is going to be really powerful. And because of Sarah's connection to Tony, maybe he is going to get a little bit further along in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I actually see it where almost like two fours, where that Sophie, Ben, Sarah, but I think Tony is probably closer with that group, where he has the connection with Ben and he has the connection with Sarah. We really haven't seen too much of Sophie and Tony talking, although we did see that a little bit last week. And then I feel like on the other side, then I feel like that Kim has Jeremy and Denise, and Tyson, I think by way of his relationship with Kim, don't forget about the poker alliance, was originally Tyson, Kim, Jeremy, and Rob. So Tyson certainly has a relationship with Jeremy. And I feel like that Tyson is probably closer to that group. And I wonder if maybe that's where the fracture is between this group of eight.
Yeah, I mean, unless we're really leaning on that poker alliance, because the original tribe breakdown, like, Kim really had nothing to do with Jeremy, Ben, mm-hmm. Michelle, and Denise. So those guys had a chance to bond. In fact, I'm surprised, because of that original breakup, that Michelle is not in a better place than she is right now.
Yeah. So Kim did swap with Jeremy and Denise, and we saw her before the merge talking with Jeremy and Denise about this plan coming in. So I feel like that Jeremy and Denise, I think that they might be closer to the bottom of that group of eight just because that they were not original Dekal, which even Tyson has over them with people like Sarah and Sophie and Tony, where Denise and Jeremy, their one connection to that group was that time that they spent with Kim and with Tony over right. on the swap Dekal tribe. So I think it's gonna be very interesting. Talk to me about Michelle and her decision with the fire tokens this week, Angie. Did you feel like that Michelle made a good call because basically she's at the bottom, she's presented with this offer, or do you feel like that was overpriced, an overspend on this 50-50 idol?
I think that was a very expensive 50% chance to stay in the game. However, I think it was the right move to make. I think you can't, especially knowing that she's near the bottom or at the bottom or went away from the bottom, you can't count on another opportunity like that coming again. I feel like in Survivor, you have to take the opportunities that are presented to you in the moment when they're presented and not look back and not doubt yourself. Because yeah, I mean, there's a chance that next week she might have been offered a full idol or something even better. But are you going to bet your entire game on that? And, you know, I think you were mentioning the know-it-alls as well. Like she sends that back. I don't know what happened. Like, does that mean that they just, the people on Extinction Island is just like, okay, yeah. Well, now nothing happens and you got to win another thing. There's no way someone else is offering Michelle something again.
Because it's why you never send back food in a restaurant and then they'll spit in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with that point where you were just on the bottom of the vote. If you're Michelle, you were in the minority and you don't know if anything else is going to be coming to you. This might be your only opportunity to save yourself. It is a lot of fire tokens for just a 50-50 coin that might give you immunity. You have to assume that you and Nick might be targets at this vote. It turned out that Adam was the one who got voted out. But I mean, even going forward, they're still going to see Nick and Michelle as a duo. So if it's something that can potentially save you, I think you kind of have to do it. It's not like you're able to negotiate with them. I think if she was in a spot where she can negotiate, maybe she would have said, oh, I'll do it for two. And then maybe they would have agreed on three. But I don't think that's how these interactions with the people on the edge work. So I do think it was expensive, but like they have to know at this point that except for like buying food or buying a tarp or whatever, or an advantage in the reward challenge, the fire tokens really aren't that useful if you're someone that's in the game.
How dare you?
So I think that if you have an opportunity to get something, you have to do it. And I think we go to even like Janet's decision on the edge of extinction, on the Island of the Idols last season, where at the time I completely agreed with her decision not to take the safety without power because it's kind of a stupid advantage, just like the 50-50 coin. However, she could have really used that safety without power at the final five. So I think if you have the chance to get an advantage, even if it's not a great one, and yes, she would have lost her vote, but I think she was in a spot where she would have been fine anyway, even if she had lost her vote there. I kind of think in retrospect, maybe Janet should have taken that. And if she never had to use it, great. But clearly at the final five, when she got idol nullified, you know, maybe she wouldn't have used it anyway, because she had the idol. So she probably wouldn't have been able to use that. So yeah. Who knows?
I did want to add that because it, you know, it is only a 50-50 advantage. There is the possibility that she could then leverage that to gain trust with and work her way into a different power alliance. So maybe if she can try and share that with someone, or, you know, it's always iffy trying to do that. But you know what I mean? Like using it just for the power it has in itself is not the full extent of the power of an advantage. You can always use it to try and gain favor with people.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, maybe showing people that she has it ends up where she doesn't have to use it because it's like, hey, I've got this advantage. You really want me to flip this coin tonight? Like, I don't know how many people are going to say, let's tempt fate. You know what? Let's go ahead. And then it just makes things more complicated. And if Nick is sitting there as a juicier target without a potential idol that he has to play, then maybe the votes just end up going to him as opposed to going through having Michelle flip her coin. But Jordan, have you considered adding the 50-50 advantage maybe for some sort of a trading of fire tokens or future points for getting down from four to two responses in the quiz?
I mean, we used to do that. We had a 50-50, and I don't know why we stopped using it. I think it was like, I don't know. I think once we added the rule where you can get 2 points and like a lot of the questions, you don't even hear the multiple choice options, we just got rid of the 50-50.
Yeah.
But it was a thing at the beginning of the Twitch quiz.
Angie, do you think that there's any chance that Jordan will be able to explain the rules of This Week in Survivor history as succinctly as Tony was able to explain the rules of Survivor to Adam?
Well, then what's the whispering?
Should we not go up and vote? Just say it out loud? Adam, what do you want us to do? That's the game. We gotta go up there, we gotta write the name down, and then come back down, and then you reach the votes.
I know that's how it works.
That's it. All you gotta do. Yeah. We go up there, we go pick up the pen, you write a name down, and then you put it in the name in the bucket, and then the host, he goes and gets the names, and then he counts them out, and then the person voted out leaves the tribal council area immediately.
And it's going to be you, and you just got to deal with it.
And then at the very end, they have a virtual call with everyone, and then get on Skype, Zoom, and then...
And then I get muted, and then we go home.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it reminded me of earlier in the season when Tony was describing the steps for like, simply, we're going to do this. And I think it was when he was making the ladder.
The ladder,
Tony just loves explaining the steps of doing things, and I could listen to Tony like reading like any type of like manual for anything either technical or building something. I wish we had a Tony instead of just written instructions for things.
First, the guy, he's going to read the question, and then you get a chance to answer, and then if you answer, then you get 2 points. If not, then you get 4 choices, and then that's it.
Yeah, that's good.
That's it.
You knew the rules.
Okay. All right.
Just get Tony on Twitch one day.
That would be great. Angie, anything else you want to say about this week's show or where we are at with Survivor 40 before we get into some social media?
I mean, I thought they'd like Chinese takeout more than they did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was surprised that everyone was like, yay.
Yeah. Well, I have a crazy theory about the Chinese takeout, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, yes.
So the fact that they all got fortunes, yes, we did see Michelle's 2 fortunes because they ended up sort of being relevant of like emptying the purse fills the soul or whatever it mm-hmm. was, and she spent her fire tokens. I would not be surprised if one of the people in their fortune cookie got some sort of like either a clue or to an advantage or some sort of advantage that maybe will like cut back to at a certain point when it becomes relevant. Because why do we even have these fortunes? Why do we have, you know, the fortune cookies with these like bullshit fortunes that don't really pertain to the game, even though Michelle sort of pertain to the decision that she had to make. I don't think we're getting that on the edit, really, if there wasn't one. I don't even think they give the fortune cookies as an option unless there's one that has a clue. Like, why are they doing that if it's not going to be relevant to a later story? I have a feeling that somebody on that event, that on that reward got an advantage in a fortune cookie. That's my theory.
I think she just wrapped it into her confessional and they're like, great, yeah. Now it's not going to make sense unless we show you eating the stupid cookies. So,
yeah, I think that Michelle, you know, referenced her fortunes when she paid for the advantage. And so I think that that's what it is. I don't know what else you're looking for.
I don't know. I think it would be more interesting if like later down the road, somebody plays an advantage that we didn't even know they had, or they find an advantage. And we do like Survivor's been doing flashbacks lately. We even had a flashback at this episode to the fleur-de-lis from the previous episode. And that turned out to be so much. So you never know.
Yeah.
I do have another question about the edit though. And the tribal council, when Adam was wrapping up at the end when he was asking people, like, does anyone want to talk to me about what's happening? Anyone? And then there's that beautiful pause of like a good 5 seconds.
Yeah.
There is legit crickets happening. Was that a post-production sound edit, or were there crickets at Tribal Council when Adam asked that question?
I mean, I think you're out there in the middle of Fiji. I'm not sure if that's just like the actual room noise that was going on at Tribal Council, or that's just like from the live database of like effects that they have. But I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what it sounds like there.
I'm not. Yeah. Possibly. I'm trying to remember if I've heard crickets at Tribal before, because I think that was a brilliant edit.
They might have thrown
if
one
they
in there.
Edited it. Yeah. I need to know.
In post-production. Actually, I have one other thing I want to just play real quick. This was, I think, a really great way where we saw Ben and he approached Adam and said, like, hey, are you telling people that Sarah and I are too close? And I was like, well, I've heard that. A lot of people are saying that. It wasn't very convincing. Tony got a similar question from Ben, and Tony handles this the right way. Here's Ben quizzing Tony.
You know what I heard, Tony?
What?
Is that you're the one that said threw my name under the bus?
No! Who told you that?
I just love it. He was so matter of fact of, Tony, did you say this?
No!
Yeah.
Ben said Michelle said that, which I think is the one of the few times this season that Michelle's gotten any heat in any of these strategy talks, despite the fact that she's been on the minority of a couple votes.
Okay. Well, she was out there in the middle of co-wrong. She doesn't need any more heat, Jordan. Okay. Yeah,
and if Ben had asked Kim, she would have said, like, no, man, that's what they said you said about me.
Yeah. Is that what she does?
Yes, that's what she's like, oh my God, I can't believe he played us both, when really she had totally done that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's get into the week in Survivor social media from the great Jacob Sager Weinstein.
Tweets, baby, tweets, they make me stand up and clap. There's actually an idol hidden inside this rap. Idol.
Okay. There you go.
I want to find the idol now.
Okay. It's right up on the podcast podium. Okay, you just got to get over to the studio, but you can't. Oh,
I can't.
All right. Anyway, let's talk about the Survivor social media. And okay, let's explore this a little bit, because this came up in reference to the Chinese food, because there was a lot of talk about Sarah Lucina. Sarah tweeted, "To put all speculation to rest, me giving up the reward to @KYNickWilson was neither strategic nor heartfelt. I'm actually allergic to Chinese food." Okay. There's been some debate. Is this a joke or not, Jordan?
I think maybe it's possible that she doesn't like Chinese food, or maybe she's allergic to a certain ingredient that is in Chinese food. I do think that it was meant to be strategic. I think it was bad strategy. I don't think it was really heartfelt, because we've, again, as Adam pointed out, we've seen how Sarah plays Survivor in Game Changers.
I've seen Sarah play.
And it's really like her game in Game Changers was incredible because of how close she was able to make people feel with her. And I think that's what this was. I think it was meant to be good strategy. But again, like I said with Adam before, you're playing against people who are also really, really great Survivor players. And it just looked transparent to me. And I don't even think her name comes up in this episode if she didn't do that. But I think if Sarah does get voted out soon, it won't be the only reason, but I think it might be one of the reasons.
Yeah. Angie, this has been a divisive tweet where some people say, like, okay, well, this makes some sense. Okay, Sarah's allergic to Chinese food, but other people are saying, no, she's clearly joking, you idiots.
Well, Tovey has an MSG allergy, and it is no joke. So I don't think she wants to, enrage all the fellow MSG allergy sufferers by making light of a serious affliction like that. I don't think it was.
Jordan's
good.
Been
I think
sick from going to MSG a few times too.
Yeah, multiple times. I haven't. It's been a while since I've been to MSG for a basketball game, at least, and not because of quarantine. I haven't gone in years because, like, they're basically a D League team.
Yeah. So I don't know what the answer is. That I do think she's joking around here on Twitter. I do think that my theory that I subscribe to, and this was brought up on our feedback show with Hannah over the weekend. One of our callers, Kiana, brought up that she thinks that Sarah Lucina actually was already good with all the people going on the reward, and she actually was afraid of Nick Wilson being left alone with Jeremy and Denise and Tyson and Tony, the people, and Adam, the people that were back who did not win the reward. And she actually wanted to swap out and go and be with those other people to prevent potentially a vote flip from happening with the six people that were not going on the reward, which I think actually would be a very smart decision. I mean, it came out maybe not in a great way, but I do think that it was something that would make a lot of strategic sense if that's how Sarah was thinking.
It just doesn't make any sense that she wouldn't admit it in her confessional. Well, even a shred of game, why hide it? You want to look like a gamer.
Well, I wonder if she was in her confessional was something like, you know, I actually was doing this out of the goodness of my heart. It was an honest gesture. Not just kidding. I wanted to, and then went into like, and maybe did they edit it a different way? Is that possible?
The look when Tony was telling her, like, Sarah, that was a mistake. She looked so shocked because to me, that's what sells it. It's like, I don't think it was a game move. And when she realized it could be like a reverse game move, she's like, ah, really? And then she starts to get annoyed by that.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was on purpose.
We've seen the Sarah shock face before when fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas got voted out and she did it. It was completely, she was acting to get the legacy advantage. But going back to Kiana's point, I think there is some merit to it. You do want to be in position in a position on a reward where you're with the people that you need to talk to. But this wasn't one of those like combined immunity rewards where you have tribal council that night. This is a reward challenge that was either 1 or 2 days earlier. So I don't think it's worth the risk of putting yourself out there and giving a reward to somebody when it's like not even the same day as tribal council.
Okay. Maybe one of these days we'll get the true answer to what's going on there with Sarah giving up the reward to Nick. Chaos Cass, Cass McHugh on Twitter, she said, remember that time you all thought I was delusional and emotional for blindsiding at Sarah Lucina? Okay, there you go. Cass knew. Cass knew what she's capable of. Let's go to another Coggy honor. This is from at Tony Vlachos 73. Gotta say, the new Tony Twitter handle, Jordan, not great.
Yeah, I mean, it has his name. I guess the 73, maybe it's the year he was born, but it
so.
Seems
I think
it's,
so.
It makes it seem like a fake Tony Vlachos account. And by the way, Tony Vlachos gets a spot on the RHAB bingo card that was made because you have dragged his Twitter handle.
Yeah, I just think that he's Tony.
Yeah,
I feel like
he could
there's
do better.
So many things that he could come up with that are more iconic than Tony Vlachos 73. It's like that was like his Hotmail email address to Tony Vlachos 73 at Hotmail before he was on Survivor.
Should we workshop this? Because, I mean, clearly Tony Vlachos, I'm sure, is taken. I'm sure Tony underscore Vlachos is taken. I know you're not a fan of the underscore, but what should he have gone with in his name? Like maybe something llama related or maybe something like relating to Kagiyan. I think I just think there's something that
Spy Shack, Ladder. Yeah. There's a million Tony things.
Yeah, I mean,
Team
Tony
TV
is
Tony. You know,
I think that would have been better.
Yeah.
He's such an iconic player. He should have an iconic account handle.
Yeah. So anyway, Tony Vlachos, you know, just he's taken some time off from feuding with Jeremy to talk about helping us understand the lions and the hyenas. He said, make no mistake, I am very well aware of how powerful hyenas are, especially when they come in pack numbers. Was definitely a compliment and respect when I made the hyena. She's the host of the B&B, right? The lion versus the hyenas analogy. Lions equal high profile hyenas, low profile, both based on hashtag survivor community perception. Okay, so it's all about how you're perceived, not actually how good of a player you are, Angie.
This has been like such a hot topic right from the Winners at War being announced. Like, how do you talk about threats versus non-threats without being insulting? And I thought lions versus hyenas were great because they're both deadly. They're both powerful. They both are able to kill people and things and animals effectively. It's just one has this big flashy mane and the other one doesn't. So I gotta, I'm on Tony's side with this.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you watch the end of Lion King, and spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it, when Scar falls off that rock, who tears Scar apart? It's the hyenas.
Yeah. Yeah. Angie, will you be working lions and hyenas into the character types? Maybe are some of the character types lion types and some of the character types are hyena types?
Well, I might from now on, sure. Now yeah. that he's opened the door wide open for that.
Okay. See if Mike Bloom can get to work on that. Can we come up with a lions versus hyenas Brant Steele? Who are the do we have like 8 famous hyenas? I think we could do like the lion from the Wizard of Oz. I think that there's enough fictional lions.
The thing is, all the fictional hyenas are from the same movie. I mean, you have Ed, Banzai, and Shenzi. And
wow,
I know that because two of my parakeets that
Jordan,
I had in elementary school were named after the Lion King hyenas. They were Banzai and Shenzi. So
why?
Did
you have an affinity for them?
I was 5. It was 1995, and the movie had just come out.
Yeah, but those are the bad guys.
They're the bad guys. Well, they're not as bad as Scar. I mean, they turn on him, and I think they were funny.
So.
Like they were funny hyenas.
I guess so. Then Tony also, a good sport, that he tweeted out, here's to a human
moment. Human.
Yeah. Happy Easter, everybody. Okay, there you go.
Oh, man. Tony saying moment is one of my favorite things on the season so far. We put it up there with numbers, comfort.
Yeah, it was great. Well, he said it like 4 times in one sentence, which was really great. Which is really great.
What accent does Tony have?
Because well, he's Greek.
I know that he's Greek and he's like from New York, but I know like a lot of Greek people just from growing up in and around New York City. People from New Jersey, people from New York that are from all that their ancestors are from all parts of the world. Nobody else, I think, has the Tony accent. It's the best accent.
Okay. All right. We'll see. Maybe one day we'll do a deep dive and we'll get into all that with him. James Lim also knows about numbers. James Lim, he says, 4 fire tokens for a 50-50 literal coin flip. The Edge overcharging customers as if it's selling avocado toast in L.A. Look at James Lim.
Definitely price gouging.
Price gouging. Right. Right. And then T-Bird Cooper, she was, you know, she's always so excited when she's watching the episode. She says, my dream survivor opening is at Tyson Apostle taking a huge scoop of his stashed peanut butter, then off to show some new school how this game is really played. T-Bird has put all her hopes on Tyson as the champion of the old school.
I mean, I do think that it's kind of amazing that 2 episodes now Tyson's returned and his name hasn't even come up. I think it probably will at some point because they are even though I would be surprised if the second returner from Winners at War is able to win the game, just being that it's going to be a jury of winners. And I don't think they're going to want to pick somebody, even if they've been living with them for a long time. I don't think they're going to want a winner who's only played like the last 6 days of the game or whatever. But Tyson, I mean, he really hasn't missed all that much of the game. And I think he's as much of a threat as anybody who's in the game right now. So he's really, I'm sure, done a great job socially of integrating himself into the various alliances, into the blob, as you say.
Okay. Then, of course, there was a Dalton Ross article this week, Angie. Did you see this? Steven and I talked about it on the Know-It-Alls of the who's the best survivor who hasn't won. They polled all the survivors. Steven and I were talking about it. But it also was some hard feelings came up out of this, and not just my feelings that were hurt. Boston Rob was asked, who's the best player who hasn't won? Boston Rob said simply, yeah, it's tough. It's probably Suri. Sandra hates Suri. And Sandra was upset about this. She said, if I'm not mistaken, at Suri Fields and I ironed out our differences at the finale of Millennials versus Gen X. This is old news, and it's not how I feel about her now. Much respect to Suri. Okay?
It's good to hear that those two are friends now. I mean,
yes.
Saria, I don't think, is a controversial answer to that question, though.
No.
But it is funny that he brings up Sanders just to get another dig in.
Just to get another dig in. And of course, when it comes to the Boston Rob and Sandra rivalry, it's...
Dig, 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 dig!
Yeah.
So she just traded one feud for another,
yes,
essentially.
Yes, she always has to have a feud. And eventually, at the Survivor 47 finale, Rob and Sandra will make up, and then there will be a new feud.
Who's going to piss her off next?
Yeah, I hope it's not me.
It's over.
That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping. It's not going to be me.
Well, that's two.
Yeah. Okay. And then, of course, Angie, do you want to weigh in on, of course, our favorite song?
Winners at War.
Winners at War. Hungry for more. Okay. If you're hungry for more tweets and takes about the song, Davey Rickenbacker said, LOL, stop hating on the song, guys. It's fun.
Davey, come on. Come hating on.
Hating on the song is the only fun part of that song.
Yeah.
It's so... jarring. Like, there's no, like, it rips me right out of the moment and throws me into some sort of Joan Jett flashback where I'm just like, what the, this has as much to do with Winners at War as the stupid fleur-de-lis. I just don't understand what any of it has to do with anything.
Yeah. Davey says to the song haters,
and I'm like, oh, hold on, pump the brakes.
Forget it.
Yeah,
I'm usually on board. I'm usually on board with what Davey has to say, but I have to disagree with him here.
Lyrics don't belong in Survivor. Like, you just shouldn't have. You shouldn't have words.
Yeah,
it's certainly not like rock anthem.
Unless it's a player singing "na na na na" in their voting confessional.
Yeah, no, that's
fine. I don't want to hear lyrics.
Yeah. Okay. Aurora McCreary. She says thoughts on the music during the episode. I'm loving it. Another pro songer, and also Debbie Wanner at War. She says, "I wonder if it's hashtag Sia singing those catchy lyrics." So Debbie is on board, but there's one survivor that you can be assured is not a fan. At Randy Bailey 1720, I am hating the music vocals at the Immunity Challenge. WTF? Question mark. Okay.
When I was doing my rewatch of the episode today, like, I typically like to rewatch the episode either the day of Twitch or the day before we record, just so it's fresh. And I do typically fast forward through the challenges, and I was doing that. I was doing like the 10-second forward just to get past it, and I had completely forgot that they did the whole Winners in War thing in the middle of the immunity challenge, and I just had to, like, even though I hated it, I just had to watch it again. It just felt so surreal that this is Survivor, and they're playing a song that makes it seem like it's either some, I don't know, some like daytime soap opera or some just some like crappy show on network television. It just takes me out of it. It's horrible.
Yeah, it does. It's jarring. It's like a montage. You're waiting for, like, you know, like it just being all edited together. Like, it's just going to jump to the end conclusion. It's supposed to be building suspense. It's supposed to, like,
I'm on board now. I'm on board now. I'm completely now. It's so bad, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's given us something to talk about, which I guess is good. But I mean, the show has so much. Like, I hope this doesn't become a theme on Survivor. They should end it.
It is the theme of Survivor.
I'm saying I hope it doesn't become a theme in future seasons.
Yeah, is it trying to do like a Thunderdome thing? Like, I don't even understand the reference. Like, I was asking Tobias, like, is this supposed to be like a Nine Inch Nails type thing? He's like, no. Nothing like that.
Yes. And on the feedback show with Hannah, I played the clip that Jeff Probst gave in the panel with Dalton Ross, where he talked about how that his idea was that he wanted to have like a Cajun grandma narrate all the episodes. And then this is where the idea came from of, you better be ready. and that's where that all came from. Jeff Probst wrote the lyrics to the song.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
When Jeff Probst tried to host a talk show, like, he should stay in his lane. I think he's very good at what he does.
How dare you? How dare you? Okay. And then real quick, Andrew, we've talked about so many other Kagyan people. Alexis Maxwell live tweets the episodes. Would you say over or under 21 live tweets for Alexis Maxwell this week?
I'm going to say over.
Over. Okay.
Yeah, Angie's right.
Yeah, 28 live tweets for Alexis Maxwell, but none about the song.
Shocking.
Yes. Okay. She did have some, you know, she did not like Sarah giving up the reward. She said, do we really care about people giving up rewards? That's such an outdated mentality. Psh, I'm over it all. LOL. She also said that of the fortune cookies, she had a little bit of a hot take. She's had all caps. All of those together are a clue. So that somehow, if you combine all of the fortunes, that was a clue to the idol.
It's bad that Alexis Maxwell and I are coming up with like the same conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Probably not true now. I think I'm off that train.
Which
they were so vague, like there was nothing specific enough.
I don't know how you hear these fortunes and think this is a clue to the
everyone
idol.
Everyone go around.
Your skill will accomplish what the force of many others cannot.
We will make changes for the better.
I love this one. As the purse is emptied, the heart is filled.
Okay, don't be afraid to take that big step.
Maybe, is it like on the Edge of Extinction, Jordan, where like the first letter of each line, if you put them together, will make give you the clue for the where the idol is?
No, I do think that if there was a clue in any of those fortunes, I think somebody either pocketed it or made up a fortune on the spot, which would be very impressive. I guess that would be similar to what Nick Adanza did with his fake idol clue.
Yeah. Okay.
No, they're all basically just like, take a chance, make good TV. That's all they're saying. It's like, don't let us moves. Down.
Yeah.
Make big moves.
They say that big moves are the best moves. Yes. Oh, I didn't think of it that way.
I'm surprised one of them wasn't like, you better be ready. They're coming for you.
Yeah.
You got to risk it to get the biscuit.
To get the fortune biscuit.
Yes. Okay. All right. Then we have our Rob Has a Pollster account on Twitter, RHA Pollster, who tweets out a quiz every single week. We asked the listeners this week, was Sarah's decision to give her Chinese takeout reward to Nick mostly strategic or mostly personal? Angie, what percentage of our audience says it was mostly strategic?
I would say the majority of the percentage. I'd say 56.
56.
I'm going to say over 56.
Over 56. I know you guys are both off. That only 36% of the listeners thought it was mostly strategic. 64% said mostly personal.
Wow. So okay. They agreed with me, but I doubted myself, Rob.
Yes. Okay. Jordan, let me ask you then this question. I know because you love to ask me Survivor Guatemala questions. So let me ask you one. Okay. Sure. Dani gave a confessional where she noted that Aubrey found an advantage on the Edge of Extinction in season 38. That implies Dani knows who Aubrey is. Would Dani recognize Aubrey if they were sitting on the same row on a plane? Okay.
So I did go back and watch this scene, and it was actually Dani did come up with the correct idea that the clue referred to something that maybe happened in a former season on the Edge of Extinction. It was Parvati who really did bring up Aubrey's name. So I'm going to say that Dani did have the right idea here, but I don't think that she would recognize Aubrey. So I'm answering now what percentage think
that Dani would recognize Aubrey if she was sitting in the same row as her on an airplane?
17%.
Okay, 17%. Okay, Angie, do you think Jordan is being too hard on his queen, Dani Boatwright?
I think he's being too hard on Dani, but I think the fans are pretty hard on Dani as well. I say 27%.
No, 69% from the audience. 69%.
I've been way off on these percentages all season.
Yes. Okay. They think that people think that Dani would know who the majority of people think that Dani would know who Aubrey was if she was on her plane.
If Aubrey was delivering food through a Wendy's pickup window,
would she recognize her then?
It's
a good question. I think better question is how many members of the cast of Survivor Guatemala would Dani recognize if they were delivering Wendy's to her?
I think
through
she
the
would
window.
Recognize the cast of her own season.
Yeah, everybody.
I think so. I mean, maybe not like
Morgan.
Probably not Morgan. Maybe she wouldn't. I mean, she would recognize
Blake
Cindy
Towsley.
Hall, though. She would definitely recognize Blake Towsley.
He's unforgettable.
Yeah, he's a golden boy.
Okay. All right. Of course, every week.
Brooke Struck.
Look, Brooke Struck is great. Okay. FanDuel, they have a Survivor fantasy game that people could play for free every week to win up to their share of $2,040 in FanDuel bonus cash. Angie, do you know which player was the most valuable player to have on your FanDuel lineup this week?
Let me think.
The top player earned 26.8 points. The second player earned 21.6.
Yeah, I know nothing about the scoring of this, but I'm going to say Jeremy.
No, it was not Jeremy. It was not Jeremy.
Was it... Kim won immunity, I think. Is it Kim?
12 points for winning the immunity for Kim, 8 points for winning the reward, 5 points for surviving the week, and then 1.8 points for her one confessional in the episode. So you get points for the confessional.
This is why I always lose drafts.
Yeah. Michelle was second place. She got 21.6 points. If you had Michelle on your team, she won the reward. She got the she got an advantage. She survived the week and had two confessionals. Interestingly, Sarah Lucina had 15.1 points. She was the third best player you could have had. She won a reward. I think that she should have to give those points away. I think once she forfeits her reward, I don't think she should get the points, but I'm not the official scorer here. Of course, it was a bad week to have Adam on your team. You lost 13.6 points for votes against and getting voted out. All right.
Rob, I never thought I'd hear you complain about game rules.
Yes. All right. Jordan.
Yeah.
Are you ready to take us to this week's edition of the quiz?
I am, and I have categories this week.
All right. So, all right. Let's go into the This Week in Survivor History quiz.
Twish.
All right. Jordan.
Yes.
Take it away.
And let's
I'm sorry that before we take it away, let's incorporate our pinch quizzer with Angie, of course. Tovey is there to help out with the quiz. Tovey, how are you?
Not bad. How are you guys?
Okay. Tovey, how much of good. We're doing fine. I mean, as good as I can be for being on This Week in Survivor with Jordan, but hanging in there overall. And have you been listening to the show so far?
Yep. So far, great show.
Okay. Oh, good. Good. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Tovey, and what's your area of expertise? Do you not want to tip us off?
I would say I'm an all-rounder. I might not be as familiar with the 30s, but old Survivor. Hit me with your best shot, Pat Benatar.
Yes. Speaking of Survivor token genes, that I think that we should also add that you are a big Tyson stan.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah, Tyson's my young for sure.
Okay. All right.
Chingu's.
Yes. All right, Jordan. Yes. So let's set up what we're going to do here today.
Okay, Rob Sunday. We are going to have four question categories. I did come up with them this week. Those questions will correspond to four multiple choice questions. Each of you will get to answer two questions. You can choose not to hear the multiple choice options. If you are correct and you don't hear the options, you'll get 2 points. However, if you're wrong, your opponent will be able to steal 1 point. If you want to hear the multiple choice options, that is fine too. You'll only get 1 point on a correct answer. Your opponent will not be able to steal if you get it wrong. So our categories today, sorry, 1 second. Ugh, I just like my just got a cramp in my arm. My categories today.
It's foolproof.
Yeah. Keeping that in or taking it
no,
out?
No, we're going to keep that.
Yeah, I have a feeling. It's still going on. Possessions.
We'll
part
talk
one.
This through. What's going on?
No, I just like I just got a muscle cramp. It's fine.
Is it carpal tunnel?
No, dehydration? It's like it's kind of like in my like side under my shoulder. But I think I'm good. Now.
Are you holding the microphone in your hand?
No, the microphone's on the stand.
Hmm.
No, I'm good. I'm good to continue.
Yeah, and this is not a podcasting injury that I've am familiar with. One time, Josh Wiggler ran over his toe with the chair.
Yeah, I remember that. I think that was like the week before he came onto Twitch.
Okay. So, yeah, that arm injuries, this is a first.
Yeah. Especially since I haven't left my house in like a month, so I don't know what's going on. Okay, so maybe that's a problem. I think I've just been sedentary and like my muscles aren't used
maybe.
To
okay.
muscles. Okay, so let's go to, we have Possessions Part 1, Boston Rob's Other Drinking Buddy, The Effing Stick, and Peak Redemption Island. Angie and Tovey, as the guest, you get to choose the category first.
I will take the fourth one, the Redemption Island related category.
Okay, so we're Peak Redemption Island. We're going to Survivor Redemption Island. This game respects big moves from April 6, 2011, 9 years ago Monday. In what many consider the best episode of Survivor's worst season, Boston Rob and the Ometepes sent Matt Elrod back to Redemption Island so they didn't have to worry about the Zapatera idol, which Ralph ended up playing for Mike Cheezel. Who did the Zaps put their 5 votes on?
I will take the multiple choice.
Was it A, Andrea Belkey, B, Boston Rob, C, Grant Matos, D, Philip Shepard?
It was D, Philip Shepard.
unfortunately, was actually C. Grant Matos. So Rob doesn't get to steal a point, but you don't get any points. And Rob, you get to choose the next category.
I just want to also add a shout out to my podcast with Andrea. I thought Andrea was really great on the recap this week. Very fun to catch up with her. Really some fun podcast interviews that we've gotten to do the last couple of weeks. The survivors are bringing it this season on the recaps and the feedback shows. Okay. All right. Let me then hear them one more time.
Yep. Possessions Part One, Boston Rob's Other Drinking Buddy, and The Effing Stick.
Okay. Boston Rob's Other Drinking Buddy implies that you are his main drinking buddy. Is that right?
I mean, you have referred to me multiple times as Boston Rob's drinking buddy.
All right. Give me Boston Rob's Other Drinking Buddy.
So we're going to Survivor Marquesas, or the Marquesa, as I like to say, True Lies from April 11th, 2002, 18 years ago Sunday. Who from the new Mara Amu tribe joined Boston Rob as an ambassador before the merge, joining him for a meal of pizza, beer, and all the fixins?
Okay, that was the great Kathy Vavrick O'Brien.
Kathy Vavrick O'Brien is correct. She is Boston Rob's other drinking buddy. That would be a fun trio, me, Rob, and Kathy having a beer together. I think
fun.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be fun for me. I don't know if it'd be fun for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they might kick me out at some point.
They're both
but
fun.
Yeah. So we have, I feel like KVO is the answer to a lot of these Twitch questions. I like going to Marquesas for some reason, and she's just a character that stands out.
I thought
out
you like season. Calling it the Marquesa.
I do like calling it. I like calling it both. I never said I didn't like calling it Marquesas.
Okay.
Come on, Rob. Possessions Part One and The Effing Stick are the two remaining categories for Angie and Tovey.
We will take The Effing Stick. Yeah.
Okay, The Effing Stick. We're going to Survivor Micronesia. I'm in such a hot pickle. April 10th, 2008, 12 years ago Friday. At the Micronesia merge, everyone but Eliza and Jason Siska voted for Eliza as she tried to play her effing stick to save herself. Who did Eliza and Jason attempt to idle out with the stick that ended up having just as much power as this week's Fordley?
Any thoughts, Angie? I think we want the multiple choice.
Yeah, let's have the multiple choice.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like Alexis, maybe. That's is that her name?
Well, let's
curly hair.
Yeah.
Anyway,
do you, you want the multiple choice?
Yeah.
Okay. Was it A. Amanda, B. Eric, C. James, D. Ozzy? So probably not Alexis.
No. This is why I'm on the Angie sit out bench.
Let's go with Ozzy.
Ozzy,
are you
is
remembering
correct.
That or are you guessing?
Oh,
yep. That's correct. Yep.
Yay! Okay,
you get a point there. Yeah, Ozzy, the creator of the effing stick. Of course, they were worried about his challenge prowess, and see if he was not immune. So why not try to get rid of Ozzy there? Unfortunately, the stick was not an idol, and Eliza went home. Rob, you get the last question here. We have Possessions Part One, and we're going to go to a season that I know that you like to answer questions from, Survivor Fiji. So you think you can mech A from April 5th, 2007, 13 years ago last Sunday. While three members of the swapped Ravu tribe found the hidden immunity idol together, who technically possessed it due to being the one who actually dug it up while Lisi Linares was sleeping nearby?
I would like to hear the multiple choice.
Was it A, Alex Angarita, B, Edgardo Rivera, C, Mookie Lee, D, Dreams Heard?
I believe it was Mookie.
Mookie is correct, so you get a point. Good job. He was the one who found it. He gives a confessional about it, saying that if push comes to shove, that it is his idol. Of course, they do end up trying to use it as a team idol. But 3-1, Rob, and we're going to go to our final round. And of course, this round...
I'm on top of my Fiji game right now.
Yeah, no, that was a good answer. So we are going to now go to, of course, trivia about Adam Klein, who is someone who has been on this podcast before. So
that sucks.
Yeah, well, I think he had fun.
Come on,
Adam.
He was
with Ben. He was with his buddy Ben. What happened to that alliance? The Twitch alliance never really came through. I think it's actually like the Twitch rivalry at this point.
Dadgummit, Adam.
I think that's why they couldn't work together. They were like, the last time we tried to work together, we got 0 points and got killed by Robin to quiz.
Yeah, every single answer he was like,
I don't know what it is.
All right, so I have 4 questions about Rob. They are true or false questions. Angie and Tovey, you will go first.
They're questions
this game.
About Adam, right?
What did I say?
He said questions about
you
Rob.
You don't want to know.
They're not about not Rob. They're about Adam. Rob is the person that you were going to go up against in this quiz. It's also somebody who's on the current season of Survivor. Yeah, there are questions about Adam. They are true or false. And if you get a question wrong, you can't gain any more points on this quiz. So you need to get this question right here. You still can potentially win this game. So first of all, pick a number between 1 and 4.
2.
Okay. True or false? The only pre-merge vote in which Adam voted in the majority was during the Live Know-It-Alls episode in which he flipped. Sorry, let me read that again. The only pre-merge vote in which Adam voted in the majority was during the Live Know-It-Alls episode in which he flipped on Figgy.
False.
It's actually true. Adam only went to tribal council twice before the merge. He did vote in the majority there where he voted out Figgy. The only other vote was the Mari Takahashi vote, where Adam was famously on the bottom. So unfortunately, Angie and Toby, you don't get any points there.
Yes,
and Rob wins the quiz.
Jordan, that was a great night that we got to see that episode. And then Adam was in the audience and he was like,
I'm here.
Yeah.
He stood up and everyone gave him a huge round of applause. So some of the better days for Adam Klein. But I will say he got a little bit of a rough edit this season, and he did make mistakes in this game. I mean, I'm a big Adam Klein fan, so I don't want people to think that I'm just saying this because I'm a fan of his from his previous season. I do think he made mistakes, but I also think he did do some things well. He was in a position where on his original tribe where he very easily could have been voted out before the merge. And I think he's someone who's always talking strategy. Everyone knows how much he loves the game. And I think they thought of him as a threat, even though he wasn't playing the most dominant game this time around. And as far as the fleur-de-lis idol, there's no harm in trying it. I mean, if he thought it was an idol, I mean, once he couldn't pull it off the podium, I'm sure he realized he was wrong, but there's no harm in trying it there. And he made for great TV. So I think Adam Klein has, even though he played obviously much better in his first season, I think he did give us a lot of entertainment in both of the seasons that he played.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that wonderful tribute to Adam Klein. Again, super nice guy. Gave us a lot of entertainment this season. So very fun to watch. All right. Angie, anything that you and Toby want to tell us about that we should check out?
No, nothing's happening. We're just working and, working full time and homeschooling our children is every bit as difficult as I thought it would be. So.
Yes, yes. I hear you. It's a challenge. Toby, now I know you as one of the moderators in Group AF over on Facebook, pay very close attention to everything going on News AF. Is it just me or has Tyson been even more locked in on News AF of late?
I think that News AF is the place where his voice is the loudest. I mean, Tyson is, I mean, some might say more than a third of News AF. He might be like 37% of News AF.
Wow, 37%. Yeah. Yes, the News AF alliance of Rob, Danny, and Tyson had not really ever come together. They were together briefly on the Edge of Extinction, but we didn't see the three of them working together as well in unison as the real Rob, Danny, and Tyson over on News AF.
That's true. Absolutely.
Okay. New episode of News AF again on Tuesday. Jordan, anything that you want to ask Angie or let people know about?
Yeah, Angie, who is the first Survivor winner that you followed on Twitter? By the way, you follow a billion people on Twitter.
Yeah. I do follow a billion people. It makes it very difficult for me to follow my feed, so I just follow hashtags. Gosh. Is it the first? Okay, so not the first Survivor, but the first Survivor winner, right?
The first Survivor winner you followed on Twitter.
Honestly, I don't remember. The first Survivor I followed was Rupert, and I can't tell you why. I think he was just the first one that popped up as like, oh, you're following Survivor stuff. Maybe you should follow this guy. I tend to follow players more than winners, so I honestly don't even remember. I followed a million Survivors before I followed a winner.
The multiple choice on this
so
one.
Yeah, there's no point, there's no points on this.
Yeah, 50-50.
Yeah, so actually it looks like the first Survivor you followed on Twitter was Rob Cisternino, but the first winner you followed on Twitter was John M. Cochran. Actually, no, sorry, Parvati Shallow. Parvati.
Okay.
Oh, excellent. Actually, it makes more sense that I would have followed Rob. I don't even know when the Rupert thing happened, but he was the only one to follow me back.
Was it Rupert that followed you back?
Yeah, well, that's part of a follower strategy, right?
Before he got locked out.
Okay. All right. Angie and Toby, it was great to have you guys here on This Week in Survivor. This was very fun.
Yeah, thank you very much.
No, this was great.
I was just joking before when I said I wasn't having fun.
Ah.
this is a riot. Joking. I don't like the quiz, though. That I was very stressed out.
That makes total sense.
I studied the wrong stuff.
Toby knew the answers to Rob's questions. Mm-hmm. And he answered before I could weigh in on some of the other ones.
Did you know it's the anniversary of the Cops Are Us Alliance?
Oh.
You know that? How come you didn't ask me that, Jordan?
I don't know if I can come up with it.
Yeah. Okay. If only Adam's plan would have worked and Sarah got voted off.
I feel like Akagi-an is a season that I hit pretty hard. So on a week where I don't get to a Akagi-an question, I don't think I can be dragged too much for it.
Okay. All right. So we still have a lot to do. The wand off is on the way. This week's Wiggle Room is going to be recording in the real time, about 2.5 hours after we get done with this podcast. So that's what's next for me. We've got Patron Pub Trivia coming up on Monday night. So busy day for me the rest of the way, getting into all of the Patron Trivia with Zach Brooks, who, Jordan, have you been impressed with Zach's question asking ability?
I mean, there aren't nearly enough Survivor questions, and I feel like I have been following along, and some of them I get right, some of them I get wrong, but his actual ability to ask the questions, I will say, is pretty top-notch. I would say he's the second best trivia host in the RHAP world.
Yeah. All right. Of course, News AF on Tuesday, and we'll be back with the Know-It-Alls on Wednesday night. I just really want to touch on that I've been so impressed with the generous donations that the RHAP community has put together as we have been trying to help contribute to the efforts to get more PPE into the hands of our doctors and nurses. In the month of April, I have been donating all of our new patron contributions, and then I'm also matching those contributions. In our first week that we have been able to get $5,000 donated to directrelief.org. I'll update you on week two on the Know-It-Alls, but just in terms of from our existing patrons, we started a GoFundMe as well at robhasawebsite.com/PPE charity. And I'm very proud to say that that GoFundMe is now over $4,000 additional money that we're going to be donating to directrelief.org for helping to support doctors and nurses and community health during this ongoing battle with the coronavirus. So just super impressed with the amount of fundraising that we've been able to have happen through the RHAP community. So really good news in a very dark time to update you guys on. All right. So that's going to do it for us here today. For those of you guys who are football fans, like the great Jordan Kalish, stay tuned. You're going to hear the voice of Ross Tucker with a couple of minutes on the upcoming NFL draft next weekend, courtesy of one of the sponsors, Bet Online. So stay tuned for that if you are interested. If not, we'll talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
All right.
Hey, it is former NFL player Ross Tucker from the cleverly named Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and perhaps more importantly, for our purposes right now, the Even Money Sports Betting Gambling Podcast, which, like everything else, is presented by Bet Online, and I am here to give you my top 10 picks for the 2020 NFL Draft coming up on Thursday, April 23rd. By the way, you can bet on pretty much any player where they're going to be drafted. And I'm going to give you some tips on that right now. Just use the code PODCAST1 at betonline.ag, and you'll get, number one, a glorious sign-up bonus, and number two, you'll be able to make the draft even more entertaining than it already is when you place over-under bets on where these guys will get selected. Obviously, I think, number one, the Cincinnati Bengals are going to take the LSU quarterback, Joe Burrow. Would be very surprised if they didn't. Number two, with the Washington Redskins, some rumors about them taking a quarterback. I don't believe it. Chase Young, the defensive end from Ohio State, is an absolute stud. That's who the Redskins will take. By the way, at BetOnline, his over-under is 2.5. So I love the under. Chase Young is going number two. So take that money, BetOnline, put on the under on Chase Young. Number three, Detroit. A lot of speculation that the Miami Dolphins or the L.A. Chargers will trade up to number three to take a quarterback. I don't think it's going to happen. I think both the Dolphins and the Chargers are comfortable getting either Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama or Justin Herbert from Oregon. And I don't think either one of them ends up trading up. So I think the Lions end up taking another Ohio State Buckeye. That is Jeffrey Okuda, the corner, at number three. Number four, you've got the G-men, the New York Giants. They're either going to go offensive tackle or linebacker Isaiah Simmons. And Dave Gettleman just can't help himself. He loves athletic linebackers. Isaiah Simmons can fly. I think he goes number four. His bet online over-under is 6.5. I really think he hits the under. Because even if the Giants don't take him, I think maybe the Dolphins or the Chargers do if they don't elect to take a quarterback. So I like the under for Isaiah Simmons. Then you get to the Miami Dolphins, number five, and they'll debate Tua Tagovailoa or Justin Herbert in this position. They're going to go Tua. You know, I know there's some medical questions, but there's some performance questions with Herbert. I think they're going to go Tua Tagovailoa and feel like they got a guy who otherwise would have been the number one pick at number five. Number six, it's the L.A. Chargers. I think they're happy to take Justin Herbert from Oregon. 4.0 GPA, smart kid, big, great arm. He's got 5.5 is his over-under for BetOnline. That's a tough one. I guess here I'm going over, but I'm not sure that I'd put a lot of money on the over there because Herbert could go at 3, he could go 4, he could go 5. So keep that in mind when you're making your bet over at BetOnline. Number 7, Carolina Panthers, Derek Brown, the D-tackle from Auburn. His over-under at BetOnline is 8.5, so I'm going under there. Number 8, the Arizona Cardinals need a right tackle desperately. I think they'll take Alabama right tackle Jedrick Wills instead of Tristan Wirfs from Iowa at number 8. So go ahead and take Wills at number 8, the Arizona Cardinals. Number 9, another offensive tackle, Mekhi Becton. This dude's almost 6'8", 370 pounds. And he can move. He's the number 9 to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Number 10, you've got Andrew Thomas, in my mind, going to the Cleveland Browns. They need a left tackle desperately. Started 3 years at Georgia. Very gifted player. His total, in terms of where he'll get picked at BetOnline, is 10.5. So he would be another under there if the Browns take him, as I suspect. Remember, you can place any of these bets at betonline.ag after you use the promo code podcast1. And if you want to hear the rest of my picks for round one, make sure you're listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast and the Even Money Podcast, so then you can make even more bets over at betonline.ag.